Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, and we'll be hoping we're going to have a special guest this evening. And if we don't, why, we'll just have to, it'll be just you and me, and perhaps you'll want to give us a call. But in lieu of presence of our guest, and while our secretary is letting us know what's going on, I want to tell you about my concern about what's happening here in America. Now, you know, this last 24 hours, 48 hours, Saddam Hussein has said that he'll allow inspectors into his country, and unfettered, they can come and look at anything, United Nations inspectors. Well, I'll tell you, the response, instead of being one of happiness on the part of our leaders, why they're saying he doesn't mean what he's saying, rather than saying, well, let's give him a chance and see if we can avoid war. If you listen to what is being said, the general tone seems to be, let's make some more demands that he won't be able to meet. And this is a technique that's been used down through the centuries to precipitate a war. And the whole idea of the war has really nothing to do with the response of the individual. You want a war, and so you make impossible demands. This is what Lord Milner did at the time of the Boer War. This is certainly was the technique that the American government used during the Second World War. They said unconditional surrender, and the Germans said, look, we'll surrender, but just don't let the Russians occupy Eastern Germany. And we weren't interested in that. We wanted to pursue that war and prolong it just as long as we could. And so we kept making impossible demands. The Japanese tried to surrender 6 months before the treaty was actually signed. And all they said was, we'll surrender unconditionally, just don't try the emperor for war crimes. And unfortunately, they They went right ahead and refused to accept the Japanese offer. And then, of course, 6 months later, after unnecessary invasion of Iwo Jima and of Okinawa, and dropping two nuclear bombs that killed about 200,000 people, they surrendered. And, of course, we never tried Hirohito for war crimes because, of course, he was part of this whole occult hierarchy, at least according to Tim Cohen. He had been a member of the Order of the Garter, this secret British secret society that goes back to the 1300s. And there was never any intention of trying him for war crimes. After all, he was part of the secret hierarchy that ruled the world. But you see, they were able to prolong the war, and they were able to do things that had the American people understood that it was unnecessary to drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki because the Japanese were ready to surrender, had already offered to surrender five separate times in the preceding 6 months. Now, if you doubt that, give us a call at 1-888-24 Liberty, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of an article, not a very good copy, but it's a copy of the article that appeared in the Chicago Tribune on the very day when the peace treaty was signed. So let's then fast forward to where we are today. Our leaders are intent upon going to war in the Middle East. And of course, that war in the Middle East will not simply be against Iraq, although that's what they're talking about. It will include Iran and Syria and quite probably Saudi Arabia. It will be really a major world war. I believe that they will probably use nuclear devices. They've already talked about that. And we very well see the total destruction of the area there and the breakdown of all the other Islamic countries in the region. Musharraf, who's the dictator of Pakistan, has already said, you know, if the United States attacks Iraq, why, of course, it's going to just create tremendous problems here. And we already have enough problems. We don't need any more. Now, he is hanging on with a very, very tenuous hold. The people of his country hate him. They know he's an American puppet. And the same thing is true with many of the governments over there. Certainly in Kuwait, we put the dictatorship back in power there after the Desert Storm War of 1991. We are keeping the government in power in Egypt today, and we are keeping the military dictatorship in power in Algeria. And a lot of the people over there really, I think, would like to have an Islamic nation. Now, I don't want it, and I wouldn't want to live in an Islamic nation, but if the majority of the people really want this, do we have a right to say they can't have it? And I would hope that then a good sense would come forward, and of course they'd get rid of it. We actually imposed the Islamic nation on Iran when we toppled the Shah back in February of 1979, and of course told the military there not to back the Shah of Iran, told him to leave the country the next day, knowing full well that we were going to be imposing this ruthless Islamic dictatorship on the people and destabilizing the whole area. And the best thing we could do is, of course, remember what President George Washington said, and that was, don't become involved in international alliances. Stay home, be friends with everybody, but don't try to rule the world. Don't try to be a world power. We will be prosperous, in effect, as long as we stay at home. Well, unfortunately, our leaders have a different agenda. They believe in a new world order and a new world religion. They believe in a ruling elite. They believe that there are people who are fit to rule, and most people should simply be ruled. That's what David Rockefeller apparently had told a group of congressmen some years ago. And Congressman Bill Dannemeyer told me that meeting with David Rockefeller, he just commented casually, well, some men are born to rule. Most are born to be ruled. And that's the way they look at this. They are the elite and we are the common folks. And they create wars, and it is we, our sons and our grandsons, who die in the wars that they create. And this is a totally created war. We never would have gone into it had it not been for the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center last September. Now, let's just take a couple of things we do know. And incidentally, if you want to call in, since we don't have a guest, why, feel free to do it. But let's just go back to August 6th of the year 2001. It was on that date that the President of the United States, George Bush, was briefed to the fact that Islamic terrorists were going to hijack our planes. That was their plan. Now, we don't know that anything was said about crashing them into buildings, but certainly the President was told that the Islamic extremists were going to hijack our planes, and there was no question at all in the minds of any of our leaders there was going to be an attack by Osama bin Laden's terrorists, or at least members of al-Qaeda associated with this extremist movement. Not necessarily Osama bin Laden was going to plan the attack, but he was certainly financing so much of the al-Qaeda movement. Of course, most people have forgotten that Osama bin Laden had worked at one time with the Central Intelligence Agency, and that on many occasions our government and the Saudi government both had had opportunities to arrest or capture Osama bin Laden, and at each occasion they had absolutely refused to. In fact, in 1996, the Saudi government had offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us, and the Clinton administration refused. This is the government of the Sudan, had offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us. They offered to turn him over to the Saudis, and they, too, refused to take him, despite the fact that it was well known at that time that it already was responsible, number one, for the attack on the American forces in Somalia in October of 1993, and for the attack on our men in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia in 1995. So, let's go to August 6th, the year 2001. The President is briefed and told that the Islamists, these radical people, these violent people who are going to attack America, part of their plan is to hijack our planes. Now, had you been the President of the United States at that time, what would you have done? Well, if I'd been President, I would have warned the airlines. The airlines said that they never received any sort of a viable warning telling them that there was a definite plan to hijack their planes. Now, of course, the administration says, oh, we told them, and the airline said, no, you didn't. So who are we to believe? Well, then, of course, I would certainly tell the airlines that they should change their attitude towards, simply rolling over if somebody wants to hijack a plane, why the staff is told not to resist them. Under the circumstances, considering the bloodthirsty, the murderous intentions of these Islamic radicals, I would have certainly instructed the people on the airlines to resist any effort to hijack planes. And if I'd been President, I would have, of course, mobilized the National Guard and immediately put them on our airports. And I would have assigned a member of the National Guard or two members of the National Guard with weapons to every plane until the danger of an attack on our planes had subsided, or we could possibly get enough marshals hired to put them on the planes. If I had been the President of the United States, I would have recommended that we certainly bar the cockpit doors and put out an order that they not be opened at any time so that these radical Islamic people who I had been told were going to hijack our planes couldn't get into the cockpits. If I'd been the President, I certainly would have recommended arming the pilots. If I'd been the President, I would have demanded a watch list, and I would have begun to check on every Islamic individual, every person from the Middle East who was boarding one of our planes to be specially checked. If I'd been the President, I would have insisted on an airport watch list so that we would anybody who was suspected of being an Islamic radical could be monitored and perhaps even kept off the plane. If I'd been the President, I would have ordered our fighter planes in the air to protect our planes at all times. But not one of those things was done. Why? What the President decided, obviously, was not to do anything. And after the attack on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the President went to see the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, George Tenet, and congratulated him for a job well done. Now, what does that suggest to you? Does that suggest that we were really trying to head off the attack? And those of you who haven't seen my latest video, it's called 911 Contrived, really need to get it and watch it and check out the various things that we have there that are well documented, that are well known, to tell you about the prior knowledge of the coming attack. But let me just explain to you what really happened. It was back in 19 1997, when, of course, a lot of people in Washington, D.C. were talking about this radical Islamic movement. Now, we knew at that time that Osama bin Laden had declared war in America. We knew by 1997 that he had been involved, first of all, in the downing of, pardon me, in the attack on the American forces in Somalia in October of 1993, which was, of course, demonstrated or depicted in the movie Black Hawk Down. We knew, of course, that he had been involved in the bombing of our forces in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, and the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia, and that he, of course, we also knew that he had been involved with the bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. And those of you who haven't read my latest newsletter, if you'd like a copy of that, well, that's what that newsletter deals with, was the connection between Terry Nichols and, of course, secondarily, Timothy McVeigh, but primary Terry Nichols, who had gone, of course, to the Philippines, where he had met with these Islamic extremists and learned how to blow up buildings. And, of course, one of the men he met with was a man named Ramzi Yosef. And Ramzi Yosef, of course, left the Philippines shortly thereafter and went over to Pakistan, where he was eventually apprehended by Pakistani authorities and turned over to the Americans. And he was living in a hostel that was owned by one of Osama bin Laden's corporations. In fact, Ramzi Yosef had taken over the direction of the Islamic terrorist movement that Osama bin Laden had created in the Philippines about 1993 and 1994. So there was a very definite relationship between the Oklahoma City bombing and these radical Islamists tied to Osama bin Laden. And that's, of course, the reason why, to this very date, the government will not release the videos that were shot in front of the Murrah Building on the day of the attack. That was April 19th, 1995. Because they don't want the American people to know that they knew about the Islamic involvement there, nor do they want the American people to know that they know that the following year the Islamists were involved in the downing of TWA Flight 800. How can we say that? Well, first of all, there were 200 people, or almost 200 people, who saw the missiles streak through the sky. And yet, of course, not one of those people was allowed to testify before the National Traffic Safety Board. Not one of those people. And they did have some people testifying as to what these people saw, and they simply lied. And if you haven't seen that video, Silenced, that is available, the video Silenced, and you'll actually hear the people talking, and then you'll see the hearings of the National Traffic Safety Board. And incidentally, everything has been done to keep that video off of TV or any discussion off of TV. The producer was asked on two occasions to appear on CNN to discuss this video, which demonstrated, obviously, that it was missiles that brought down TWA Flight 800. And on both occasions, the government brought pressure to bear. And, of course, the showing and discussion of that film were suppressed. So the American people don't know what appeared in the press in Europe, the Islamic press, saying, we shot down the American flag. Oh, boy. And then I'm sure that the Islamists really never understood why our government kept insisting it was an explosion in the central fuel tank. And, of course, if you have any question about that, it's covered in a book called Bin Laden, The Man Who Declared War Against America, written by Yosef Badansky, who was the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, and certainly one of the best informed people on Osama bin Laden and Islamic terrorism in America today. So by 1997, our government knew that there was going to be an Islamic threat on America. Osama bin Laden had repeatedly called for a jihad against America. And so it was decided by the Secretary of Defense and by the President and congressional leaders to charter a investigation, a special commission. And so in October of, or in mid-1998, why the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century was chartered, and it held its first meeting in October of 1998. Now, on that committee, there were 14 commissioners. 12 of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations. The committee was co-chaired by ex-Senators Warren Rudman and ex-Senator Gary Hart, both of whom were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And they began talking and discussing and getting information in on the terrorist threat to America. And in October of September 15th of the year 1999, the Phase 1 report of this, the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century was released. And this is available through Radio Liberty. People want to verify what we're saying. And in the Phase 1 report, it's called the New World Coming Report. The New World Coming Report, it says, there are going to be major terrorist attacks on America. In fact, the whole the publication deals with the coming terrorist attacks on America. There are going to be terrorist attacks. They're going to use weapons of mass destruction, a massive terrorist attack on America. And then, of course, in the year 2000, why the Phase 2 report came out, the call for restructuring of our government. And in January of 31st of the year 2001, the Phase 3 report came out that called for a national agency on Homeland Security, a national agency on Homeland Security, and, of course, everything which is a part of the Office of Homeland Security. The whole idea of restructuring our government, limiting the power of the courts and of the Congress, and, of course, centralizing massive power with the executive branch of government, this is what the plan was all about. It's all laid out in the Phase 3 report. In fact, almost everything that has happened since 9-1-1 was planned long ahead of time, but how would you get the American people to go along with the restructuring of a government? How would you get Congress to go along with giving up their power and their? How would you get the Senate and the House of Representatives to limit their overview or their control or oversight of our intelligence agencies? How would you limit the power of our duly elected representatives and lower centralization of power with the executive so we could have a more efficient government, of course, to address this threat of international terrorism? Incidentally, those of you who haven't read the book Dollars for Terror, written in 1999, or the book on Holy Wars, written in 1999, really need to get them because they will both tell you that the American Central Intelligence Agency was financing this Islamic extremist movement and had all along. We were financing the Taliban, and those of you who haven't seen the article in the Washington Post, if any of you would like it, we'll be glad to send it to you. In the Washington Post, it simply told how the United States Agency for International Development had spent $56 million on textbooks to indoctrinate the young people in Afghanistan in the radical Islamic belief, and, of course, getting them involved in this Islamic jihad. In fact, we financed and created the best enemy money could buy. We encouraged this whole concept of terrorism. In fact, according to Michael Springman, who I've interviewed, who used to issue visas in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, when he was there, he was required by the CIA to issue visas to people to come to America who had no justification to come to America. For Saudi Arabia, he eventually found out we were bringing terrorists in here for training. Oh, you've never heard that before. Well, maybe you'd like to get my interview with Michael Springman, but there's so much you're not going to hear from Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and the other news anchors, because, of course, all of the major news outlets here are controlled by people affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Skull and Bones and all of these covert societies I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. Well, anyway, by January of the year 2001, the plan was in place to restructure the American government. Now they just needed an excuse to go ahead and do it. But how would you get the American people to be willing to restructure the American government? How would you be willing to get them to go to war and backing this new foreign policy? And, of course, the foreign policy really was America was to be the dominant force, and we were to take over control of the great oil wealth of Central Asia. And this is laid out in a book called The Grand Chessboard, written by Zygmunt Brzezinski, who is, of course, the architect of all of our foreign policy, going back to the time when he was picked by David Rockefeller to create the Trilateral Commission. Incidentally, their logo is three intertwining sixes. And in his book, The Grand Chessboard, Zygmunt Brzezinski says, you know, you're not going to be able to get our multicultural society to unite behind a foreign policy unless there is a perceived direct external threat. Unless there's a perceived direct external threat. Well, as of the 11th of September of last year, everybody perceived we had a direct external threat. 15 of the 19 terrorists who attacked the United States came from Saudi Arabia. None of them came from Afghanistan. None of them were members of the Taliban. But the Taliban offered to give us Osama bin Laden if we just show them the proof he was involved in any way with the 9-1-1 attack. That wasn't, we wouldn't accept that. We demanded that we open up their country and give them all the terrorists, but we wouldn't tell them which terrorists we wanted. And we said we wanted all the leaders of Al-Qaeda, but we wouldn't tell them which leaders of Al-Qaeda we wanted. So they said, we'll send Osama bin Laden to a third country for trial. And of course, that wasn't satisfactory. They said, well, we'll simply force him to leave the country. And of course, we could have at that time, if he was forced to leave the country by plane or by donkey or however he got out of the country, we could have apprehended him. But of course, we didn't want any of those things. We wanted to go to war with Afghanistan, which we did. And of course, a terrible tragedy there that occurred. And incidentally, those of you who haven't read that wonderful article, it's in Newsweek on August 19th of this year. Newsweek, August 19th of this year. I think it's page 33 or 34 or 35. It's about how Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden escaped. And, of course, the Afghans who we were employing to fight Al-Qaeda had pretty well trapped them there. And they were moving in for the kill when in came a fleet of black helicopters. A fleet of black helicopters and scooped up Al-Qaeda and disappeared. And it was assumed, according to this article, and this is what the Afghans believe, that, of course, Osama bin Laden escaped at that time from capture. Now, of course, the American government said, no, we were just dropping off members of the special forces, but at least according to the article, nobody there, at least, mentioned seeing any special forces at all. All they know is they were just about ready to capture the wicked Osama bin Laden. When in comes the fleet of black helicopters. That is August 19th of this year, Newsweek magazine, page 33, 34. And I'd like to suggest that maybe things are not at all as we've been led to believe. Under any circumstances, it was the 3 days after the attack on the World Trade Center. It was the 14th of September, and Gary Hart, who was the co-chairman of this committee, the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century, he was addressing a specially convened emergency meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C., and this is what he said. There is a chance the President of the United States can use this disaster to create what his father spoke of, and I think he only mentioned it one time, New World Order. There is a chance the President of the United States can use this disaster to create what, and I think his father only used the term once, and that is a New World Order. We actually have the film clip on that, and you can see that in the video. It's entitled The Grand Deception. And, of course, here is a man who's talking about using the deaths of all those people to pursue an agenda, which, of course, is the major agenda of the Council on Foreign Relations. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here because we have calling in from New Orleans, Tara. Hi, Tara. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And Tara, of course, is a lawyer. And she gave up the practice of law to, married a street minister. And they have a street ministry there in the Bourbon area of New Orleans. So it's good to...
And we have a church.
Right. Well, go ahead and tell us what...
Well, I had a question. Right. I love it when you have open law, when you have the opportunity to speak, Dr. Stan, because you're so knowledgeable about all this stuff and you bring it together so well. And I finished your book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and about the Anglo-American establishment. And I was watching Prince Andrew talk on Crown and Country. It's a PBS program. And he brought up overlooking the Lord Mayor's palace or home in what is known as the Monetary District of London, which is supposedly by some accounts the control of the Anglo-American establishment. They have Gog and Magog overshadowing that. Did you know that?
No, I really didn't know that at all.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll send you information. I thought maybe you might know about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you ever get to London, the center of everything going on there is Trafalgar Square. With a big statue of Lord Nelson there. But I mean, on one side, of course, they've got a place for the Round Table, the Commonwealth Club, which is where the Round Table publication came from, and you go a few blocks, and there's number 10 Downing Street, and you go a few more blocks, and the Fabian Socialist headquarters is there, and then a few more blocks, and you come to the Buckingham Palace, and you come up the other side, in behind the statue of Lord Nelson, and there is the William Pitt House, where the it's called Chatham House, where the Royal Institute for International Affairs is centered. And of course, they're the British counterpart of the Council on Foreign Relations, part of this front group for the original secret society. And you go up the street to the maybe about a mile away, and that's of course where the London School of Economics is, where they train the socialists and all these people for the elite. And then of course you come back down again and you start there where the at the Commonwealth Club. So all these things are centralized. Oh, and number 10 Downing Street is right there as well. So, I mean, everything is right there. And the average individual has no idea that within a mile or a mile and a half there, of course, is all this center of power for these people who rule the world.
Right. Well, that's the interesting thing. And, you know, the Queen's position in the Knights of the Garter or whatever.
Right, right.
And she has to march behind this Lord Mayor individual. She has to deign to him. And I just thought it was interesting that Gog and Magog are historical, mythological characters in English history. And Prince Andrew was going on and on about this, and they have these two huge statues that overlook that area.
Well,
I thought that was really interesting. With everything that you say about that, you know, in terms of Russia becoming, you know, the communist country that the Anglo-American establishment really was the one that financed it and stuff like that.
Right. Well, there's so much there the average person just has never had an opportunity to learn about. Hey, we've got to take a break. Do you want to hang on until after the break?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Okay, fine. You hang on. We'll be right back with Kara here right after the break. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to mention that, of course, that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you're out there across America, we hope that many of you will decide you'd like to become partners in our effort to educate the American people about what's really going on. And if you do, why, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call, would be 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARREN. And certainly those who partner with us get our four best tapes of the month and our monthly newsletter. But more than that, they're helping us to get the truth out, the truth that people are just not going to hear elsewhere. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to go to our website, which is RadioLiberty.com. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. And you'll find our programs there. You can actually either listen to our programs directly on the Internet, or you can link to our other programs. You can listen 5 hours a day, and you won't get anything accomplished at all in your life, but we'll listen maybe 1 hour a day or 2 hours a day, because sometimes we'll have the same guests on several programs, very, very good guests. We do ask to come on several of the programs, and then, of course, you can get our newsletters there. Our August newsletter dealt with the Oklahoma City bombing. Our June and July newsletters dealt with the vaccinations. Stories that you're never going to get elsewhere. And if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter and you haven't had one before, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we certainly want to encourage you to tell others about our website, to tell others about our programs, and first to encourage them to listen and challenge them, give them copies of our programs, give them copies of our newsletter, try to get them to think, try to get them to understand that we are not involved in a political battle. The conspiracy we talk about is not any other conspiracy than the eternal conspiracy against God that's described in Jeremiah 11:9 or Ezekiel 22:25. There's always been a conspiracy against God. That's how it's able to go from generation to generation to generation. And, of course, there is a secret, a mystery that has been passed down from generation to generation. And that's, of course, described in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, you're going to have to read the book to find out what it is. And when you find it, you'll think it is so self-evident. Everybody should know and should understand, but of course they've changed the teaching in our churches today from being effective and, of course, from causing people to have changed lives to making people feel good about themselves. Certainly, as Robert Schuller said, we would never want to tell anybody that they were a sinner. And yet, of course, that's the very essence of the Christian faith, that we're all sinners saved by grace. But, of course, we will only be saved by our Lord's grace. Well, if you'd like to get in touch with us again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because figuratively at war, we've been bombing Iraq for many years. We've been at war with Iraq already since the end of the Gulf War, and we've been killing people over there with our bombs. And of course, now I fear that a far worse war is going to develop under one guise or another. I don't know how they're going to justify it. Maybe they'll stage an attack to make it appear like Saddam Hussein attacked us. That's how we got into the Spanish-American War, with a phony incident, the phony Gulf of Tonkin incident that wound up costing us 58,000 American lives to get us into the Vietnam War. They're going to get us into a war. I'm sure they will, because I think we're being drawn in here by powerful spiritual forces. I simply suggest you read Isaiah 3, the fourth chapter of Isaiah, from about verse 3 down to about verse 20, 25. Read the rest of the chapter. And in fact, the predictions there are really rather frightening, because it suggests, and I don't know whether it's applicable, this is what it's about, but it certainly suggests we're going to use nuclear weapons in that area. We've already talked about it. And of course, I think we are going to unleash the gates of hell. Again, number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because I believe America will soon be at war in Iraq and, of course, in the Middle East, against Iran, against Syria. Who knows what other countries will be drawn into this war. And, of course, if you think this is not going to affect you here at home, why, of course, you probably are waiting for your WorldCom stock to come back again. And we'll be back in just a moment here with Tara calling from New Orleans. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and Tara's on the line from New Orleans. Hi, Tara.
How you doing? I just finished 1984 by George Orwell, which, interestingly, was very hard to find. I had to get it at a used bookstore, but we're really in the midst of that.
Now, did you recognize Emmanuel Goldstein in today's life?
Well, you know, on September 11th, 2001, when they flashed later in the day, they flashed Osama bin Laden's big face up there, I said, oh my goodness, that's Goldstein.
That's Goldstein.
It just clicked, you know, and I hadn't read it since high school. And I went to a couple of university bookstores to locate it, because I teach at a community college, and they didn't have it. And then I didn't go to a regular bookstore after that, but I just figured the universe, you know, it was required reading for me in high school and then at university, and I was just so surprised that I couldn't find it there. And then I went to try to rent it at Blockbuster, along with Manchurian Candidate and the president's analyst, and they don't, Blockbuster doesn't rent those movies out. They don't have them, and these are classic movies.
Oh, they don't have the Manchurian Candidate?
They don't have the Manchurian Candidate. They don't have the President's Analyst. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, it's an excellent one. It's a Lee Marvin movie. He's the psychiatrist of the president, and he's got all the secrets, and he goes nuts, and he runs away, and he meets up a KGB agent, comes and gets him and says, oh, we're all part of the same thing. I mean, it's what you always talk about, that they're all working together. And, you know, it's a really, it's a humorous one, but it makes the same point.
Of course, Wag the Dog, of course, is really one of my favorites. And, you know, it is exactly what they're doing. They're creating this whole scenario to manipulate the American people. And, of course, the tragedy is so many people died. And, of course, they even went so far as to lock the doors, bolt the doors shut on the roofs of the building so nobody could be rescued by helicopter, as they were during the first The bombing of the World Trade Center. And we saw something the other night where a woman named, I believe her name was Beverly Eckert, and her husband was in the building, and he'd gone up to the roof and tried to get to the roof. And he was there, you know, right next to the bolted doors as the building began to collapse. And, of course, she wants to know what really happened. She's going to bring a lawsuit, and the government's doing everything they can to block them from giving a lawsuit, because if you do a lawsuit, you know, against the Port Authority or, you know, airlines or whoever you bring, then you can get discovery. You can get people in to testify under oath. Could you imagine if they could get some of the military commanders in and ask them why there were no planes in the air that morning, or who ordered the doors to those bolted shut so nobody could escape to the roof and be rescued by helicopters? Could you imagine the impact on the American people if they even suspected that there was advanced knowledge and we left those people there to die so we could get into a war with Afghanistan, then a war with Iraq and with Iran and with Syria and Saudi Arabia, and unleash the gates of hell in that area?
It's overwhelming to be living in these times, but it's definitely the end times. And, you know, Bill Schneblin said in his speech on Islam that the next war was going to be with Iraq long before it was even being talked about in the media.
But he had been told that by Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist, who actually used to appear to him in apparitions, and told him exactly what was going to happen, not only in Iraq during this war with Saddam Hussein, about what was going to happen here in America.
Right. He also made mention of something which just recently happened. He said that they were going to find the bones of Jesus, and they found that at Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were located, they found the bones of the great teachers, what they're calling them now. I don't know why they've decided that it's the great teacher, but they're going to investigate and find out who this quote-unquote great teacher.
But, of course, that would be entirely contrary to the Bible, because, of course, Jesus was resurrected. That was the miracle. And if he's not resurrected, then Christianity is not true.
Right. Well, that's the whole point of bringing it out. Yeah.
The Christianity. In fact, one of the things that can, you know, more than anything, you know, convinces me it is absolutely true is because the devil and his people do everything they can to discredit it, and, of course, to really have all their secret rituals, which are a mirror image of the Christian ceremonies.
Absolutely.
Well, you have anything else you want to ask, Tara?
Not at this point, but God bless you, Dr. Sam.
And we're going to have you on the program here when?
On the 26th.
On the 26th. And Tara's going to be with us there from where she lives there in New Orleans, and they have the street ministry. And some of the things that go on there are just beyond comprehension. Of course, they have orgies in the streets there that would make Sodom and Gomorrah pale to insignificance.
Absolutely.
And we can't be too graphic, but anyway, we'll look forward to that program, Tara.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
God bless.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, we were talking about, of course, Senator Gary Hart's remarks on the 14th of September, and then, of course, on the 20th of September, the president addressed the nation and called for the establishment of the Office of Homeland Security, which was exactly the same thing as the National Agency for Homeland Security that Gary Hart had and his commission had advocated on the 21st of January of that year in the Phase 3 report of the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century. And then, of course, very, very shortly thereafter, the Centers for Disease Control began contacting various state legislators to get them to introduce the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act in their communities. And this, of course, had been planned a couple of years before, but how was you going to get the states to pass something this ridiculous? I mean, this is the most draconian law you've ever seen. And, of course, under this law, in case of a national in case of a declared public health emergency, they would be able to round people up and put them into camps and isolate people and quarantine people and force them to be vaccinated and seize their cars and seize their medical supplies and seize their gasoline and seize their homes. I mean, if you ever saw anything, a blueprint for dictatorship. And yet this had been, of course, planned at least a year and a half to 2 years before the attack on September 11th. So now the Centers for Disease Control has the opportunity to get this passed because people are ready, we've got to do something about these terrible and wicked terrorists. Well, before the attack, everybody would have opposed this legislation. After the attack, they could hardly wait to impose this and get this through. And let me tell you, this is the most draconian piece of legislation you've ever seen. It's described in my May newsletter up on the web, or if any of you would like, haven't got the copy of our newsletter before and would like to get that May issue, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll be glad to send it to you. Of course, we hope that maybe you'd like to get that on a regular basis, get the newsletter, because we do put out one every month, and, well, we cover all sorts of things you're not going to hear of elsewhere. And then, of course, comes the anthrax attack. And, of course, in the wake of the anthrax attack, everybody in Washington, D.C. is just so upset, and we're being told, oh, this is, Traditional Values Coalition. I think that was what public radio said. They were the ones who did it, these right-wing extremists. Or then, of course, it was a Saddam Hussein, or it was Osama bin Laden. Well, it turned out the anthrax came from one of our own laboratories. It was our anthrax. Somebody in our government actually was responsible for, or working for our government, or associated with our government, was responsible for the anthrax attack. And I wonder if it's just coincidence that Vice President Cheney and the White House staff were started on Cipro, prophylactic medicine for anthrax, on the evening of September 11th. Why would they have done that? I mean, certainly the last thing I would have thought of on September 11th was starting on Cipro in anticipation of an anthrax attack. But, of course, Vice President Cheney and part of the White House staff were started on Cipro that evening, almost as if somebody must have suspected that attack was coming. Well, anyway, a byproduct of that attack was, of course, the USA Patriot Belt. And I can't remember the name for that, the acronym for that, but it's a long description about how we're going to fight terrorism. And they call it the USA Protection Act, USA Patriot Act, but really it's the most unpatriotic act, because really this is all the legislation that Bill Clinton couldn't get through in 1995 after the bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City, why, of course, George Bush got through. And what it is, basically, it sets up a new means by which the FBI can get permission to wiretap you and listen to your emails listen to your faxes or read your faxes. It's electronic surveillance, and of course it makes it much easier for the FBI to get that than ever before. Not only that, they can come in and they can search your home without your permission or your knowledge now. And of course that's, of course, in the name of fighting terrorism. But if you read the definition of terrorism, it doesn't have anything to do with Islamic terrorism. You would think that this would have to do with Islamic terrorism. Oh no. They redefine the term terrorism, and almost anything you do, or any pin you do take, or anybody you associate with might very well be considered to be terrorist. There's not one stipulation that I can see of talking about Osama bin Laden's terrorism. This was the greatest power grab of all time for the police force and for the police institutions and the intelligence institutions that either did the worst possible job in monitoring and protecting us when they knew there was going to be an Islamic attack, or allowed it to happen. And, of course, we know the FBI was told, you will not investigate Islamic terrorism. Now, they knew the attack was coming. Why would they have kept the FBI from examining and investigating Islamic terrorism? John O'Neill, who was the deputy director of the FBI in charge of counterterrorism, resigned the 1st of August of the year 2001 because he couldn't do his job. He wasn't allowed to do his job. He was blocked at every turn trying to stop, the Islamic terrorists in this country. And we knew the attack was coming. Why weren't we investigating? Why didn't we have an airport watch list with the names of Islamic terrorists or potential terrorists on it? Instead, they had an airport watch list. They had Barrett Schoss on there and Dave Wegener and other people we have on our programs quite regularly. But they didn't have any Islamic people on that or any of the Islamic terrorists. Why do you think that was? And they knew who many of these people were. They were monitoring Muhammad Adam. The CIA monitored Muhammad Adam in Germany from January to July of the year 2000. So why wasn't he on a terrorist watch list here in the United States? Oh, the CIA can't talk to the FBI. Well, that's what they tell us. If you believe that, why you believe anything? The Defense Intelligence Agency coordinated the FBI and the CIA. They met regularly, and I've talked to a gentleman, in fact, the man who is the head of the board of his newspaper, that's Harry Martin, told me the Defense Intelligence Agency met on a regular basis, and of course with them, the CIA and the FBI, and they exchanged information. So we're not really getting the truth from the American press today. But then, of course, if the American people really understood what had happened, they would probably rise up in their righteous indignation and say, we don't need more laws. We need to enforce the laws we already had, and the people responsible for this should be tried. Because if you know a crime is going to take place, and you don't report it, and you don't try to stop that, a serious crime that results in the death of people, then you become as culpable as the terrorists were. Well, anyway, of course, they got through the USA Patriot Act, and they got through the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, and they got through, or at least they passed the House of Representatives, and they're just sort of arguing over the Office of Homeland Security, and right now it's being filibustered in the Senate by Robert Byrd, but of course it's going to go through. The things that they're arguing about really are unimportant, but they're giving the impression that there is a real controversy. But what they're doing is restructuring government and moving us towards an all-power executive and limiting the power of our duly elected representatives. And then, because it's much easier to control one president than it is 500 and some odd elected representatives. And that's an inefficient system. This is all about power and centralization of power. And then, of course, they've come up with something under the Citizen Corps. It's called TIPS, Terrorism Information and Prevention System. Terrorism Information and Prevention System, TIPS. And that's, of course, the spy system by which people will snitch, snoop, and spy on you. Your neighbor will, and what about one in 24 people will be assigned to a spy on the rest of them. They want the people from the post office, the people, the UPS, a delivery man, the people who work, read your meters, anybody who can get into your property, they want them all to begin to spy on other Americans. And, of course, it's not on Islamic terrorists. This has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism, because it is really a system of surveillance in our society. The FBI has been given permission to monitor what goes on in the churches and in libraries, and to go to the libraries and see what the library books are being read. Now, did you ever stop and contemplate that? I mean, this has been in the paper a number of times. The FBI is going to begin to monitor churches. Now, let me ask you a simple question. How many Islamic terrorists go to churches in America today? Do any Islamic terrorists go to churches? No, I mean, white Anglo-Saxon or Spanish, but Christians go to churches. Islamists go to mosques, but they're not going to be monitoring mosques. They're going to be monitoring churches, because this whole thing has to do with monitoring the population of this country and using the threat of terrorism to justify that. That's what's so amazing. And the American people aren't smart enough to see this. They're so, they've got too much mercury in them from their vaccinations, maybe too much fluoride from the fluoridation of their water, which has an effect on their minds. I don't know what it is, but the American people just are not thinking. This, there is not one stipulation in the U.S. Patriot Act, USA Patriot Act, that says all these things are going to be having to do with Islamic terrorism. This has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. We're going to begin monitoring the churches because, of course, satanic people who work within our government hate Christianity, and they realize if the Christians ever understood what this is all about and God should, for one reason or another, take the scales off their eyes, why, of course, they might stand up and say, we're not going to put up with this sort of thing. We have a constitution. That's the law of the land, and you can't change it no matter who you are. We have a country, and you're stealing our country from us. And, of course, you're using the military and the financial power of the United States to bring about a new world order. In fact, if you read the definition of terrorism in the Terrorist Act, those who want to change our form of government by coercion or force, well, by coercion, that's the Council on Foreign Relations. That's Gary Hart and Warren Rudman. That's, of course, all the people in the current administration who are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, people like Condoleezza Rice, people like Colin Powell, like Vice President Cheney and some 300 other people within the Council on Foreign Relations. 10% of the Council on Foreign Relations are involved in George Bush's administration. What does that tell you? That's about 10% of the Council on Foreign Relations members. If you want to get a good plus job, see if you can get an invitation to join the CFR, and then you've got a one chance in 10 of getting a good government job. That's how it really works. Even a larger percentage, a larger number were there in the Reagan administration. So you have to understand that it doesn't matter whether we have the Democrats or Republicans in the White House. The same people are always in charge. Because they are dedicated, they have a goal, and they have unlimited financial resources that come from the prince of this world, Lucifer himself. And this is really what it's all about. There are spiritual forces at work in our society. I'm hoping sometime very, very soon to have a woman named Alexandra Robbins, who wrote a book about the Skull and Bones Society. A Skull and Bones, of course, is an occult society. It's a satanic organization. It can be traced directly back to the Illuminati. It was formed in 1832. And, of course, at least according to this book, the reason that the number 322 is below the Skull and Bones, and if you've ever seen their emblem, why it is a human skull, of course, cradled between crossed thigh bones, with the number 322 belief. And at least according to Alexandra, that actually is because it was organized in 1832, and it was the second chapter of this society. Originally, it was a secret society, a German satanic society, tied into, it was Luciferian, tied into the Illuminati. And of course, it was formed in this country by a man named Russell. And of course, he, of course, got the leaders of the society at his time there at Yale to join it. And of course, since that time, why, they have essentially controlled the country. There are, I think, 9 members of the Taft family. There are 6 members of the Bush family have been members of the Skull and Bones. And of course, this goes on from generation to generation to generation. And we actually have, through Radio Liberty, and I don't think anybody else offers this, we have a syllabus that actually contains the names of all the members of the Skull and Bone Society from 1833 right up to 1983. So that's, pardon me, 1833 to 1983. So that's about 150 years of members of the Skull and Bone Society, and gives you a little rundown on who they were. And of course, our present president came from this satanic society. His father came from it. His grandfather came from it, and 3 other Bushes came from it, because it's intergenerational. They are, of course, very aware of genetics. You have to have truly blue blood running through your veins, a part of the superior race, to belong to Skull and Bones. And of course, the story of the initiation rites, I really couldn't discuss on this radio program, or certainly I'd be sounding like Howard Stern. But of course, it is so vulgar and so horrible to contemplate what really this involves. And when the president was recently asked about the organization he has sworn the secret oath to, our Christian president, who belonged to this organization and has never renounced it, why wouldn't a Christian renounce his membership in an organization, of course, the Skull and Bone Society, of course, requires these horrible oaths, but he's never renounced it. In fact, he has really tried to deceive people. In his autobiography, he did say that he belonged to it, but it was so secret he couldn't discuss it. When asked after he was nominated for the presidency about it, he said, is that organization still around? I didn't know if it was even still around. Well, of course, he knows it's around. 6 members of his family have belonged to it, or at least 6 Bushes have belonged to it down through the years. Now, I can't document the original. Maybe we could get a genealogist to check, but we do know his father and his grandfather belonged. And this is the man who today leads the free world. And the fact that you're not going to hear about this elsewhere is simply a reflection of the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. America's in real trouble today. We've turned our back on God, and as Thomas Jefferson said, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever. And so our plea to you is always remember that if you obey God, he will bless you. If you reject God, he will judge you. And he will judge our country depending upon how this country obeys his laws. When you hear Tara, who was our caller a little earlier, who, of course, works there on the Bourbon Street area of New Orleans, and she'll be telling you, of course, the things that go on there. I mean, they're just so grotesque on the streets of New Orleans that it's hard to describe. And, of course, you think God is going to ignore that? Well, I think we're going to see God's judgment on America. But then, of course, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And, of course, if church reflects, or if society reflects the church, then the church is in real trouble today. Well, it's time to say goodnight to our listeners up in the great Northwest, and we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you've enjoyed my dissertation on the Office of Homeland Security and all of these new laws that have been passed and these new secret courts they're setting up and depriving people of their constitutional rights to trial. But this foreshadows what happens to a nation that turns its back on God. Till tomorrow at the same time, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills, overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America listening to us, we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, of course, please hold your calls. Right now we have Randy Thomason with us from the Campaign for California Families. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's always good to be with you.
Well, tell us what's going on.
Well, hey, here's some good news, first of all. There's been a new poll taken of where Californians stand upon the life of unborn babies, abortion, and what the government policy should be. Of course, we know abortion always stops a beating heart. The child in the womb, even before it is fully developed, has a totally different DNA structure and often a different blood type than the mother, and half the time a different gender.
Yeah, a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God.
It's amazing. And so every child is a miracle in the making, and you know, where do Californians stand? Well, there's been a new poll taken that shows that Californians overwhelmingly support parental notification of abortion for a minor child. They want a parent to be notified before an abortion can be performed on their daughter. We're talking 85% of the public say, yeah, notify the parent, must happen. For a daughter under age 16, for a daughter under age 18, it drops a little bit, but 71% said, you better notify the parent. And I think those numbers would be consistent, Dr. Stan, if they'd asked a question about parental consent.
What was the percentage again for parental, who have favored parental notification?
85% said, yes. We want to favor that for 16 and under, and when it was 18 and under, it dropped to 71%.
All right.
So those are strong, strong numbers.
And right.
There was also another one that said, okay, should a pregnant woman seeking an abortion first have to receive accurate information about the options available to her, the consequences and health risks to her, and future childbearing, you know, and 84% said yes, inform her. So that's a big vote for informed consent.
But of course they don't do it, and there's no legal requirement in the state of California to do that.
That's exactly right. And it's terrible that it is. I mean, we've got over 300,000 abortions done every year in California. 300,000
sure.
A year. I mean, that is huge. Now, a third of those is being paid for by you and I, the
sure.
taxpayers. And, of course, Governor Gray Davis is just plumbing along, doing all that stuff and expanding abortion.
Sure.
He signed the bill that, Dr. Stan, I mean, when you were in medical school, the schools were not required to offer abortion training. They probably were not trying to get you to be an abortionist, were they, Dr. Stan?
Well, actually, of course, you could not even think about doing a hysterectomy on a patient, or even a DNC. You know, if there was any question that person was pregnant, and if you were going to do a DNC for a miscarriage, you had to have another consultant come in and sign on it, and everything was done to protect human life. Isn't it tragic that we have forgotten about preserving human life, and now it's simply, if you want to kill it, go ahead.
Right, and so Governor Gray Davis, he signed a bill called AB 2194, which is forcing all medical schools to basically offer this abortion training within their curriculum to the medical students in residency on their way to become doctors. This is all to try to get more abortionists, train these guys to be abortionists.
Well, God will not be mocked, Randy, and one day there will be a price to pay for the people's apathy and indifference to public affairs.
Well, there certainly will. Gray Davis also signed another bill called SB 1301, which locks partial birth abortion into the California state constitution. We're talking about declaring abortion to be a, quote, fundamental right. That is now going to be in our state constitution. That bill that he signed also allows nurses to do drug-induced abortions. We're talking about RU486, the so-called abortion pill.
Let me ask you a question. There have been a number of serious complications from that and deaths.
Absolutely, there have been. And again, women aren't being given this information. It's hard to find a prosecution of abortionists these days. There's a case down in Southern California being done by the United States Justice Foundation, which is trying to get abortionists to simply follow the law of contacting the police when statutory rape has occurred. They get girls coming into these abortion clinics who have been impregnated by adult males. Now, that's statutory rape, and that is prosecutable, and it is reportable, and it's supposed to be reported to the police. But the abortion clinics, they don't want to follow the law. They apparently believe in sex, 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 and abortion, abortion, abortion. And so there's a case going on, and we'll see what happens from there.
Okay, fine. Now, what about the transsexual foster care bill?
Well, I wanted to bring that up. We've got a flyer that I'd like to get into people's hands It's up on our website, savecalifornia.com. There's still time to inform your friends, your neighbors. Your church really needs to get this church flyer for this weekend. The transsexual foster care bill that undermines religious freedom and undermines parental rights and forces some shocking indoctrination upon vulnerable children. Now, these are the foster children are the most vulnerable children outside the womb. They really are. They've been neglected. Many of them have been sexually abused. And now to force this sexual agenda, including transsexuality, upon foster children is beyond shocking. And you would have many foster parents leave the system because they don't want to be pressured to support this agenda right in their own home. And I want to give you some phone numbers for Governor Gray Davis. Governor Gray Davis needs to be called. He is still undecided on this. Now, the good news is Bill Simon has announced his opposition to AB 2651. We commend Bill Simon in that. The San Diego office is too far, but let me give you the San Francisco and the state capitol office of Governor Gray Davis. The San Francisco office is 415-703-2218. 415-703-2218. Sacramento is 916-445-2841. 916-445-2841. And the email to Governor Gray Davis is governor@governor.ca.gov. The simple message to give to Governor Gray Davis's paid staff, and they're paid to take your message to the governor, by the way, is that you want the governor to veto AB 2651, the transsexual foster care bill.
Now, of course, one thing I'd like to ask you, do you have any idea what he's going to do with this paid leave? So, you know, if somebody's wife has a baby, that they can take off of work as well for 6 weeks, or somebody at home is sick, they can take off for 6 weeks, and, of course, they're going to have to get full pay. Isn't that going to drive a lot of industry out of the state?
It's going to mean less jobs. I mean, when you have something going on in your life, especially pregnancy, you need to understand that you just need to take some time off. Why should employers have to pay for that, including why should we be having this bill, which is called SB 1661, by the way. That's on Governor Gray Davis's desk. This bill redefines family as well. It incorporates, quote, domestic partnerships right alongside marriage in terms of family leave.
And, of course, the thing is that if a woman is pregnant, I could understand her taking off. But her husband taking off, too? I mean, this is the thing that's, of course, going to bankrupt the industries of the state, and they're going to leave here. They're going to be just a huge sucking sound.
Well, there's a lot of people opposing SB 1661, and that's also something that when you call Governor Gray Davis's office, tell him that you oppose that bill, too, SB 1661. So, Dr. Stan, I guess the last thing I want to say is visit the website at savecalifornia.com. We've got a lot of information, but in particular, we want you to have that church flyer. It's very important that you get this flyer, get it to somebody in your church, someone in authority who can give it to everybody in the congregation this Sunday so that more people can call. And if your pastor won't go for this, you know, you can always print it yourself, make copies, and distribute it to people in the parking lot.
All right, thanks so very much.
All right, thanks, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And that was Brad Dacus, of course. And now we're going to go to that was Randy Thomas, and now we're going to go to Brad Dacus. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Oh, doing just great.
Okay, well, tell us what's going on.
Well, we're really excited at the Pacific Justice Institute for the many students out there across the country that tomorrow will be celebrating Sea of the Pole, and that's where they boldly get together and they pray around the flagpole. We have had received a number of calls, and we're real pleased to report that this year, overall we're seeing a really very not that much resistance. We've had a little bit of difficulty, some people being told that they can't do it, some students, but overall we've been very pleased, and we're very confident that it's going to grow and more as more and more students boldly display their faith and do so with courage and follow through.
Now, and of course, really, this is not organized by the state, so there would be no justification for anybody opposing it. And of course, unless they were anti-Christian, which of course the real motivation behind opposing praying around the flagpole.
Absolutely, and that is the motivation, by far. And so, clearly, students have a right to do it. And if any of them have any difficulties at all, I want them to please feel free to give me a call. And that's the Pacific Justice Institute. Tomorrow, after the events, I'm going to be meeting with 57 youth pastors who've been working to do this in California, and hopefully we'll be going through some more things, some new options for next year. But it's just it's so exciting, and we're very encouraged that there hasn't been as much resistance this year as we anticipated.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm pleased about that as well. Any other cases you want to talk about, Brad?
Well, I think it's just about that's probably the most important thing right now, and just for students and others just to be encouraged to know that they have any difficulties at all. To give us a call, and we'll jump right on it.
Well, why don't you tell them the telephone number and, of course, your website.
You bet. Our telephone number is at the Pacific Justice Institute. Is 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129. Our webpage is pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org.
All right, Brad, thank you for everything you do, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Oh, okay. Well, that was Brad Dagers, the Pacific Justice Institute. And, of course, they're doing a great job. And if you, are being harassed or efforts or steps are being taken to make your life miserable in some Christian activity, or why, of course, they will represent you free of charge, pro bono. And it's a wonderful, wonderful service. We need this to protect the people because, believe me, the big money is on the other side. And, of course, this all has to do with this perpetual spiritual battle. And there are people who hate Christianity. They realize that this is the stabilizing force of this of our society. They realize that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, and they don't want liberty. They want to destroy liberty. They want to destroy Christianity. These are wicked and evil people. Now, there's some people who are just misguided, admittedly, but many of them know exactly what they're doing. And the intense hatred they have for anything that, of course, reflects God and His love and justice is, is just a terrifying thing to see. And when you cross swords with these people in public debate or in meetings, you realize that they have a different worldview. They look upon the world differently. And, of course, they hate what you and I stand for. So anyway, right now we have with on this line John Spring. And John Spring is a geographer, and he's taught in the past. And John, of course, has some thoughts about what's going on over in Afghanistan. Of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But John called me, and of course, he is expressing, why don't you tell our listeners what you told me about what your view of what's going on over there in the Middle East, as it seems our leaders are just very, very upset because Saddam Hussein's going to allow the inspectors back in and are going to allow them to check and see if he really does have those nuclear weapons, which we keep telling people he does, and chemical and biological weapons. But he said now he'll let the inspectors back in, and yeah. Now they're saying, well, gee, we're going to have to make more demands on him then. He's not being cooperative. He's willing to go along with the system. And I have no truck for Saddam Hussein. He's a wicked and evil man. The trouble is, of course, he was kept in power for many years by other evil and wicked men in this country who, of course, financed him and helped him and supplied him and gave him the military and the reports and the military information that he used in his war with against Iran. And, of course, that was the leaders of the United States. Some of the key people in the Reagan administration were involved in that. And, of course, as you remember, of course, the man who really ran things during the Reagan administration was a man named George Herbert Walker Bush, who eventually became the president. So go ahead, John, let our listeners hear your thoughts.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stan, for giving me an opportunity to appear on your wonderful program tonight. Yes, I do have some views which might differ from yours somewhat on this whole issue of the Middle East, but you must understand that I've had 20 years of looking through this through a different outlook than most Americans because of my involvement with many Afghans during the Afghan War fighting against Soviet occupation. But I would like people to understand that in Afghanistan today, ironically, a good share of what we supposedly were able to accomplish to stabilize to some minimal extent the situation there was a result of cooperation supposedly with Russia. And if we were to get involved in an all-out invasion of Iraq, this could change rather rapidly. We might find that various factions of the United Front might either withdraw or revolt, for example. Another area that we need to be concerned with, of course, are the so-called oil interests of the multinational corporations such as Chevron and Unocal in Central Asia, in the Caspian Aral Basin. And that, too, could change overnight if the Russians were deciding to put pressure on the leaders of those various republics. And, of course, everyone's heard of the $42 billion agreement between Iraq and Russia. And so when you consider all of these factors, Dr. Stan, I think we have to realize that whether we like it or not, Russia will be a decisive factor as to whether or not we make that, in my opinion, erroneous step into Iraq at this time.
I see. So what do you think is going to happen? Are we going to work out a deal with Russia, give them some oil rights, and make some concessions to them? Well, right now, of course, Russia wants to move into Georgia. And this is, of course, one of their former republics. It's headed by a man named Shevardnadze. And most Americans have very short memories, but Shevardnadze was on the on the talk show host here about a decade and a half ago. A very affable gentleman who, of course, a dedicated communist. And but he was here, and then, of course, when the Confederation of Independent States was formed, he was assigned down there to become the dictator of Georgia, and we have our special forces keeping in power there. Well, some of the Al-Qaeda, the Chechnyan rebels have moved into Georgia after, of course, they're being forced out of Chechnya, and, of course, these are Osama bin Laden's people. And the Russians, of course, want to go in and get them. And we don't want them to go in and get them. They say, well, Shevardnadze is not doing anything about them, so we're going to go in and get them. And so we're backing Shevardnadze to keep the Russians out. And, of course, the Russians want permission to go in and attack Georgia to get Osama bin Laden terrorists, and we're protecting them there. And there's something wrong with this picture. Do you understand that, Tal John?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. Evard Shevardnadze was formerly their foreign minister when there was the Soviet Union, and of course he had contacts throughout the world during his political career with the former Soviet Union. But as a result of that, we find that there are actually some contingents of U.S. forces currently in Georgia, which means that we are already, at least indirectly, involved in that nation, which almost borders with Chechnya and Russia. And as a result, we're finding ourselves in a rather difficult situation there in that we are there primarily to back Shevardnadze, but at the same time, the Russians want to be able to have a hot pursuit of terrorists from their perspective who might decide to enter Georgia.
Well, they're already in Georgia. That's the thing. They fled Chechnya, and they're in Georgia. So these are Osama bin Laden's people, and we're protecting them, and that doesn't make sense. Or maybe, of course, we backed them in Kosovo. We backed Osama bin Laden's terrorists in Kosovo. We backed Osama bin Laden's terrorists over there in Bosnia because we had some sort of a deal with Dr. al-Zawahiri, Zawahiri, who was Osama bin Laden's right-hand man. All that's covered in the book, Osama bin Laden, the man who declared war on America. So things are never as they really appear to be.
That's true. Now, as you recall, Dr. Stan, Russia put several demands on us regarding Belgrade, Yugoslavia, and Serbia, which we did not honor. And then we were surprised when all of a sudden there was a Soviet contingent landing in Kosovo. But at this particular stage of the game, so to speak, Russia is able to act or at least retaliate or make some decisions which would go against our interests if we were to, let's say, invade Iraq without their blessing. In the case of former Yugoslavia, they were not in a position to really do too much in the way of negotiating, but they do have some cards up their sleeves, so to speak, which could work out to their advantage in a geopolitical scheme of this type. So I want people to be aware at least of the fact that Russia is a factor that we will have to reckon with whether or not we do decide to go into Iraq.
Well, because one of the things that's been suggested is that we would guarantee the Russians right to some of the oil fields over there, and we'd take some of the oil, would take most of the oil fields, but Russia would be able to have some of them. Now, is there, what's really so interesting about this whole scenario is that Russia has been the primary country that has been breaking the embargo and supplying Iraq all through this time, and of course helping Saddam build up his military in preparation for America's coming attack, because we have been at war with Iraq ever since 1990, and of course we've been constantly bombing Iraq for the last decade. If somebody was dropping bombs on America every day, wouldn't you think that we would consider ourselves at war with that country? If we have some big bully, maybe you know, a combination of Russia and China was bombing us every day, the American people would be incensed.
Absolutely.
And yet we have been bombing Iraq for a decade. We've been at war with Iraq for a decade. Why doesn't anybody ever want to come right out and say it? And we've killed a lot of Iraqis, and it's estimated, and we have these figures out of the Wall Street Journal, 500,000 Iraqi children. 500,000 Iraqi children. And when Madeleine, according to Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, when Madeleine Albright was asked, you know, our former Secretary of State, by Leslie Stahl, well, was it really worth it? Her remark was, well, we felt it was worth it. You know, a couple of million and a half Iraqis we killed. Their blood is on our hands. I mean, Saddam Hussein may be a wicked man, but remember, we put him in power, we kept him in power, and we left him in power in 1991, and there's no way you can justify that. It wasn't simply a mistake. We knew what we were doing, and we, of course, created the best enemy we possibly could.
Yes, we could, Dr. Stan. Getting back to what you said about Georgia and Chechnya, there's one ironic factor that we might discuss briefly about that whole situation, and that is, what is really motivating Vladimir Putin to intensify his forces on Chechnya? Primarily because Chechnya is part of the proposed gas and pipeline route across the Transcaucasus, leading from the Caspian Sea to the Black Sea and onto the Danube Corridor, or other ports leading to Europe and other markets throughout the world. And Chechnya, if it were under Russian control, would generate a considerable amount of revenue for the Russian government. So this is one of the key factors why Vladimir Putin will intensify his efforts in that area and possibly fabricate another bombing of apartment building complexes in Moscow, as was occurred has occurred in the past.
Now, I think for our listeners out there, what John is alluding to is, first of all, Chechnya was an independent, one of those independent areas, independent states. So how could you justify going to war with them? Well, one of the things that was done is that there were three apartment houses in Moscow that were blown up and a lot of people were killed. And, of course, they said, oh, it was those nasty Chechnyan rebels down there. Now we got to go to war with Chechnya. And there were a lot of people, including some very prominent Russians, who said, no, the KGB blew those up and killed all those people to justify going to war. And this has been brought up repeatedly over and over again. But, of course, people find it difficult. Why, blow up your, kill your own people to justify going to war? Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the reality, and this is what the Russians, many Russians, believe, that if Putin, or and I think it was Putin who was the man who wanted to get into that war with Chechnya, And, of course, he had the buildings blown up so he could go in. And that's John, what John is alluding to, is that it'll blow up a few more buildings to create an incident to justify, of course, expanding the war with Chechnya. But it's been a terrible, bloody war. The people there resisted the Soviet invasion and, you know, the rape and the pillage and the horror there. And of course, this was a good area for the Al-Qaeda terrorists to move into. It's a Muslim area. And so Osama bin Laden's people were there working. But of course, for a time, we were backing them against the Russians. I think we backed off in our support now. But of course, here you play both sides against the middle, and the only people who lose are the tragic civilians and the soldiers on both sides who are being manipulated by their leaders.
This is so true, Dr. Stan. And unfortunately, if we do go into Iraq because of the estimated civilian fatalities, we will be creating our own Chechnya. And we will be looked upon with scorn by the rest of the Islamic world, which is unfortunate because actually there's a decline in the jihadist mentality throughout not only the Middle East, but throughout the rest of the Islamic world. Perhaps 9/11 was the high point of the jihadist movement, which many analysts believe is now on a decline. So if we go into Iraq, we're going to be accelerating the jihadist movement instead of allowing it to naturally decelerate.
Well, I think that, of course, this would be the greatest mistake we could ever make, because we will unite 1.2 billion people against us. An article to today's Wall Street Journal, front page. Apparently, there was a gentleman, a professor, who had been very close to the president of Egypt, and then it turned and been critical of him, and so he was sent to jail for 7 years. Well, of course, George Bush came out and condemned why the Egyptian government for sending this man to jail in the name of human rights. And not only did the government say, well, this is none of your business, but so did the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a radical Islamic group. So did the Islamic Jihad, who opposed the government there in Egypt. All of them said, in essence, get off our back. This is none of your business. This is an internal affair. Why are you butting in here and talking about human rights in our country? You haven't talked about it before. You've been financing, the government here for a long period of time. Why are you suddenly now talking about human rights when you've kept the authoritarian and dictatorship, for all intents and purposes, in Egypt for the last 20 years?
Yes, this is so true, Dr. Stan. Practically every place that we have made a friend or ally throughout the Middle East has been a very repressive dictatorship.
That's, of course, what most people don't understand. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest, John Spring, and we'll welcome your calls when we get back right here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, again, those numbers, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we certainly hope that many of you will decide right now that you want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us get the truth out across America, because if we don't, who will? And if not now, when? And so we hope that many of you will be willing to consider joining with us in this epic struggle. And it is an epic struggle. It's a spiritual struggle being fought on a political battlefield. But, of course, can America, can freedom survive? Or, of course, will the people become so apathetic and depraved that they simply go with the tide and accept what's going on today? And, of course, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is that good people do nothing. And, of course, this is exactly what's happening. The price that good people pay for their apathy and indifference to public affairs is they're ruled by evil men, and we are ruled by evil men today. And behind them are secret societies. Behind them are subversive movements. Behind them is a desire to, by force and coercion, change our form of government from a free society into an executive dictatorship or a constitutional dictatorship in the name of fighting terrorism. And of course, most people are afraid to say this sort of thing. Maybe most people have more common sense than I do, but I'm saying what I believe to be the truth, and we can document everything we say, and if you want us to document things, why, give us a call, and we'll always try to correct something if we say it that isn't correct, but most of it, we've got the documentation right at our fingertips, where you can go and document the happenings, and of course, the story is entirely different than you're getting it to the regular controlled media. And of course, the whole means by which you control a population is to control what they hear and what they see and what they read. And of course, Radio Liberty is an alternative source of information. And if you'd like to become part of our team, we'd love to have you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. Remember, our website, radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, tell other people about our website where they can hear our programs 5 hours a day, either directly or by links, where they can actually pull down our newsletters, where they can record our archive programs. A great source of information, because we get some great guests, and we encourage you to tell others to get them listening, so they can join us if they have the courage and the integrity. And so remember what Dottie told us in his Inferno, that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in a time of moral crisis maintain a position of neutrality. So these are surely times of moral crisis, and we invite you to join with us, partnership with us in this epic struggle. Remember again our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is John Spring, who's a geographer. So John, go ahead and pick up your thoughts. And incidentally, our number, remember, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you have any strong feelings on whether we should or should not be going to war, let's hear them. We'd love to hear them. You can disagree with me all you want to. Go ahead and give us a call. Go ahead, John.
Well, Dr. Stan, there's one thing I failed to mention earlier about Iraq, and that is that a former Soviet and Russian by the name of Primakov worked very hard in the Middle East to establish an alliance amongst the nations of Syria, Iraq, and Iran. Now, that was quite a challenge, considering the fact that Iraq and Iran were enemies of one another just about a decade ago, for all practical purposes. And as a result of his dedication, he more or less was able to put together an alliance amongst those three nations of Syria, Iraq, and Iran. And just slightly more than a year ago, there was a rather important summit held in Iran, which more or less brought this out, that one of the outcomes of their meeting was that these three nations would at least provide military cooperation to each other, not only if any of them were attacked, but also with their overseas operations in such areas as Lebanon and Palestine.
How about the Iranian and the Syrian terror cells that have been here in the United States for well over a decade and a half? The same cells, of course, that Saddam Hussein was not able to mobilize during the Desert Storm War because Iran and Syria wouldn't let him. Any mention at all of that?
I don't have anything directly in terms of an alliance amongst those three nations related to that. But you are so correct in the fact that there have been cells active in the United States during the last decade, which most Americans know very little about. As Alan Shippers has pointed out, David Shippers has pointed out that in Oklahoma, for example, there were many members of the Republican Guard from Iraq that were brought over at the end of the Gulf War, and it's very possible that some of those may have been involved in the Oklahoma bombing situation, and possibly later on during 9/11 as well. So there are some connections which we're not as aware of as we should be, and unfortunately our relatively incompetent intelligence community in Washington has not done their job, just as they did not do their job 40 years ago related to the so-called Cuban Missile Crisis. But that's another story. One other point that we should bring out, Dr. Stan, is that if such an operation is carried out against Iraq, this will leave Taiwan, the nation island of Free China, defenseless against a possible invasion or blockade from communist mainland China.
I think that's a very, very serious consideration, as well as South Korea would certainly be very vulnerable to attack, because if there were an attack from the north, we would not have sufficient forces to defend it.
And people do not realize the significance of Taiwan. Most Americans understand how important Japan is. To some extent, we have an understanding as to how important South Korea is, but most assuredly, Taiwan is just as important as South Korea, in many respects, maybe even more so in terms of its skilled labor force in the high-tech area. If, for example, Taiwan were to finally be invaded by the Beijing regime, by the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, this would change the political situation in the Western Pacific overnight. This would require Japan to take a much different view towards the United States. It would require South Korea to prepare for an invasion from North Korea, and China's sphere of influence would practically dominate all of the Western Pacific.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. We do not have the military force today we had a decade ago. The average American doesn't realize that. But we're going to have a hard time putting together a force of 250,000 men, which, of course, is what some people believe will take to actually invade Iraq. But we're in the process of moving people over there as rapid as we can. We're mobilizing National Guard units here in this country. And, of course, we're transferring many of our carriers into that area over in the Persian Gulf and Indian Ocean. We're, of course, now have bases in Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. And we have men stationed in Uzbekistan. We have men stationed in Kazakhstan, in Georgia, as we mentioned, in Afghanistan. We have mentioned people all over there. In fact, this past couple of days, Saudi Arabia has said that if the United Nations gave permission for an attack or justified the attack, that we could use their land as well, because they know that, of course, one of the major objectives, in my opinion, is going to be an attack on Saudi Arabia. And, of course, if I'm right, why the Saudis are trying to cover for themselves and trying to get back on our good wishes, not understanding there's nothing they can do, because I believe the plan has already been made. It was made a long time ago, and I think that we're just seeing a scripted situation being carried out today. But what really frightens me is, of course, the fact that we have talked about using nuclear bombs. And remember, here it was just not too long ago when George Bush was talking about how we would consider using nuclear bombs for hardened bunkers, things of that sort. Yeah. And, of course, the idea that we would begin using nuclear weapons there, Saddam Hussein is not a threat to the United States. He's really not a threat to Israel, because he knows if he used a nuclear bomb or chemical bombs on Israel, they would retaliate with a massive nuclear attack and simply eliminate his whole country. But what happens if he knows he's going to be defeated and he knows we're going to use nuclear weapons there? Would he, of course, then use nuclear weapons to strike Israel? And if we start using nuclear weapons, he might use chemical or biological weapons against Israel. But if we start using nuclear weapons over there, remember, of course, that Saudi Arabia has, I think, about 150 missiles. None of them are nuclear tipped at the present time, but they put up the money for Pakistan to build their nuclear weapons. And, of course, it's a very short plane trip from Pakistan to Saudi Arabia. I think that, of course, we are getting into a quicksand, a quagmire, unparalleled in all history when we get our men over there, especially if we start talking about using nuclear weapons, because many other nations have nuclear weapons today as well.
Well, Dr. Stan, I realize that most of the Islamic nations do not have a superior force for deploying such weaponry. However, From terrorist operations point of view, with the small and miniature nuclear devices that are now available on the black market at reasonable prices for that type of weaponry, it is not out of our realm of possibility that we could be attacked by terrorists bringing in the small nuclear weapons here in the United States. This is far more realistic than even biological agents or chemical reagents being deployed over here by terrorists, because small nuclear devices would be far more effective in terrorizing large percentages of our population.
You know, I read a very, very disturbing article in the American Sentinel this month, and I had to check it out. It was quoting Chris Ruddy of Newsmax, saying that the FEMA had invested, and it was either $30 or $300 million, I think it was probably $30 million, to begin to prepare to build tent cities where they could locate millions of people from destroyed cities. Well, of course, I wanted to make sure about it, so I called Newsmax, and I got the articles, and I got really the follow-up on it. Apparently, Chris Ruddy had put out a story saying essentially what I just told you. And, of course, the contracts were to be let by the 30th of January of next year. And, of course, the inference was that they would correspond with the time we were to be at war in Iraq. Well, the story, apparently, was not quite what we had heard. Chris Ruddy then had talked to the people at FEMA, who, incidentally, a number of people had read Chris's articles, had called FEMA and said that they were factually inaccurate. So Chris called them and said, what's factually inaccurate? They said, well, we are going to have the contract let, but that doesn't mean the construction is going to be underway. This construction for these tent cities could take 3 or 4 or 5 years. But, of course, we're putting out to get the plans to build these tent cities, and we're putting out this large sum of money to actually get the contracts and the plans for building these tent cities, but we're not going to have them up immediately. Well, why would FEMA be putting out, $30 or $300 million, I think the figure was $300 million, as I remember, to get a plan to build tent cities, to house millions of Americans? What in heaven's name are they planning on here in this country? And, of course, most people would say it just couldn't happen here. But I think, of course, the truth of the matter be done, known by if God is just, God is going to bring judgment on this country. That's the only thing that he can do. Because, of course, if he's a holy God, he cannot allow his holiness to be flaunted, especially by a nation that he's blessed as greatly as he has ours in the past. So I believe that our leaders know that there are going to be terrible, terrible problems, and they're making some arrangements for us common folks. Of course, they've got their underground bunkers where they're going to go, and they're going to be taken care of very comfortably. And these bunkers have been built. I mean, these are underground cities that have actually been built and constructed. We have one of them up here in the outside of Sonoma, that Harry Martin's been up there and seen it. And, of course, these are being built all over the country for the elite to go to when all hell breaks loose. Have you heard anything about that, John?
Well, I've heard some rumors to the effect around the Washington, D.C. area, but not on the grand scale of throughout the nation is what you just described.
Well, I know that Harry Martin, of course, checked this out, and there are some suggestions that there may be some, not too far away from us, but I'm sure that you and I won't be included on the list for that. And these are bunkers, of course, will withstand chemical or biological or nuclear attacks. So they're planning on something. And, of course, these people know what's going to happen. Nothing happens by accident.
Yep.
And, of course, as the report put out by the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century said on page 3, that's of the Phase 1 New World Coming report, history does not happen. It's created. History does not happen. It's created. And if you'd like to get those reports, where they are available, you can get them off the Internet. But we have them. We have them all nicely bound. And we think they're something everybody needs. I'll tell you, I go to them very frequently because I want to know what the enemy's planning.
Yes.
And every time I read what the enemy's planning, what this commission made up of 12 members of the Council on Foreign Relations, I think there were only two people there who weren't CFR that I could document, they have a plan for us, and it's not a plan we're going to like.
Yes. What I find rather disturbing, Dr. Stan, is that even now, while we're under supposedly orange alert, which is the second highest level, to, I guess, what's red or pink, the ultimate, is the fact that we are still very lax on our borders, both between Canada and Mexico. And it's unthinkable that if we are so much threatened by international terrorism that we would be so lax on our borders at this stage of the game. So
unless, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. And your point is well made. If we're really at war with terrorism, why haven't we sealed our borders? If we're at war with terrorism, why are we still allowing people from terrorist countries to come into this country? Any terrorist who wants to can go into Canada, get a Canadian passport, and come to America and stay as long as he wants to. If you are from a terrorist nation, you're a Muslim man, you can go overseas and get your training in Al-Qaeda, but when you come back, the airlines will stamp you as a U.S. Resident. If you have permanent residence here, they will stamp you as a U.S. citizen, so you will not be actually questioned when you go through immigration as if you were a foreigner. Even though you're not a citizen of the United States, standard policy to actually put on your form that you are a U.S. citizen, even though they know you're not a U.S. citizen. Now, all of this is in the latest a magazine put out by WorldNet Daily. It's excellent. I would suggest everybody get a copy of that and read it through. And you say, well, why are we really trying to stop the terrorists from coming into this country? And I would simply answer, how are you going to have terrorism if you don't have terrorists? And, of course, that, of course, I think is a very provocative question. We knew Muhammad Atta was involved in this. We knew Muhammad Atta. I got $100,000 from General Muhammad Ahmad, who was the head of Pakistani ISI. And on the very day of the attack, he was here in Washington, D.C., conferring with Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and Vice President Cheney. And if you'd like to get any information on that, we have articles on it. And when Condoleezza Rice was asked about that on an interview on CNN, she said, well, he wasn't meeting with me. She didn't deny that the man who financed Muhammad Atta had been here in the United States. She just said, well, he wasn't meeting with me. And perhaps the list did not include Condoleezza Rice, but it did include Dick Cheney and, of course, Colin Powell. So, things are never as they quite appear to be. If it liked the information, we call it the smoking gun, and we have the articles out of the Times of India and out of other newspapers throughout the world. Well, everybody knows who funded Muhammad Atta. It was Pakistani intelligence. And Pakistani intelligence was a surrogate of the Central Intelligence Agency. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. I'm not saying we put them up to it, but of course we knew what was happening, and of course somebody had to provide the funds for it. Why not the American tax dollar?
Yes. And even to this day, Dr. Stan, based on our rather poor intelligence gathering agencies, it's still rather uncertain as to whether or not Iraq had any direct role or involvement in the 9/11 situation.
No, there's no evidence that they did. But, of course, they have to have some sort of a justification to get them to go to war. I mean, how could you possibly get us to go to war with Afghanistan because 15 Saudi Arabian citizens attacked America? And, of course, you had to come up with a guise, a pretense to somehow justify it. And then, of course, how are we going to justify going to war with Iraq? Well, he's a bad guy. Well, he's always been a bad guy. He may have weapons of mass destruction, but does he have weapons of mass destruction? If he does, why not let the Israelis take them out? They'd do it tomorrow without a blink of the eye if we just gave them the go-ahead.
Yes, they would, and they would...
They'd do a lot better job than we would, I'll tell you.
Yes, they did a very marvelous job in the early 80s, as
right,
I recall.
Right, 1981.
Yes.
They went and they knocked out Saddam's nuclear factory, where he was actually working on nuclear weapons at that time.
Yes, the French were involved in that nuclear facility, but of course there are going to be many other foreign investors who will look for the almighty dollar or geld currency, whatever it might be, to fatten their coffers with additional wealth at the expense of many people. And I guess there's one other factor that we need to consider, and that is the safety and security of our armed forces personnel that would be deployed and are deployed, I should say, in the Middle East. When you fight an operation that's halfway around the world and logistically dependent upon supplies coming through on a regular basis, and if any of those lifeline routes should be cut off, just as lifeline routes could be cut off to the island of Taiwan, you create a very difficult situation for sustenance. So I hope that everyone is continually praying for our members of the armed forces so that they will come home safely and hopefully without the need for being in combat against Iraq or any other would-be enemy in the Middle East.
Well, I'm asking all of our listeners to call and fax and write the congressman and say, vote against this. Do not go along with this. Do you remember Vietnam? Do you remember Korea? Do you remember we left Saddam Hussein in power after Desert Storm? Why are we going to war over there? Saddam Hussein is not a threat to us. If he has weapons of mass destruction, so does the Russians, so does India, so does Pakistan, so does China. Are we going to go to war with them? So does Russia and France. Are we going to go to war with them? Saddam Hussein is not going to attack the United States, and he's certainly not going to attack Israel. He has these weapons not for offense, but for defense. And, of course, he's a wicked and he's an evil man. But going to war with and killing a lot of civilians when the motivation has nothing to do with doing away with Saddam Hussein. It has to do with creating a major war in that area and changing the political structure of the Middle East.
Yes, rest assured, Saddam Hussein would be in a very secure bunker or move to a series of secure bunkers throughout any invasion of Iraq. And he would be probably the last person to die in such an attack. But thousands upon thousands, if not millions, of innocent civilians in Iraq would die. That's the unfortunate situation.
And, of course, the people of Iraq remember in 1991 when George Herbert Walker Bush was the president of the United States, and he went on the radio and he told the people of Iraq to rise up against Saddam Hussein. He told the people of the South, who are Shiites, who hate Saddam, to rise up against him, and we'd come in and protect them. He told the Kurds in the North to rise up, and of course we'd come in and protect them. And then when they rose up, why, of course, we didn't protect them, and Saddam slaughtered them. And they remember, you know, that you can't trust the word of an American president, just as the people of Zimbabwe are learning that. It has nothing to do with America. It has to do with the wicked people who have taken control of our government. And until people understand the secret societies and their impact on America, the secret symbols that you'll find every place, you know, on the back of your dollar bill, pick up a Time magazine for the 26th of August, I think it is, 26th of August, Time magazine with the world on the front of it, and of course surrounded by petals of flowers. It sort of looks like the heart of the flower. And of course it's the world there, and then you'll see on just to the left of the United States and the world, there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, the infinity sign of Satan. It's a figure eight. What's it doing in the middle of the ocean there? Most people would never recognize it. The magazine features talk of globalism. That's what it's all about. They understand that the globalism they're talking about is satanic, the one world order under Lucifer. But I would say that not one in 10,000 Americans who saw the front copy of that Time magazine, August 26th this year, with a globe on it, and just there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, Satan symbol, they don't understand what's going on. And that's why we have to let them know. Well, we're just about out of time, John. What are your parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I would like to second what you said about urging every American to contact his congressman or congresswoman and senators from their respective states and let them know how they feel about this entire situation. Because it may not be a fast, quick situation as occurred during the Operation Desert Storm, because our armed forces are not up to the level of readiness that they were 10 or 12 years ago. And in the meantime, if we continue to just sit back and assume that the professionals have things in hand, They may have things in hand, but it may not be for our national interests, as you pointed out so well, Doctor.
Well, of course, Saddam is saying this, talking about not having his forces dispersed all over the country, but putting them in the city, so we'll have to do hand-to-hand combat or, you know, fighting within the cities with all of the civilian casualties that will be involved. How many innocent human beings, citizens, 10% of them are Christians. How many are we going to sacrifice to get Saddam Hussein, who we financed and kept in power? And of course, what will be the implications of this as far as the Muslim population of the rest of the world? Do you really want 1.2 billion Muslims hating America as they do today, with increasing hatred? And even the people, you know, who oppose Mubarak in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic Jihad are siding with him against us. We're creating a horrible, horrible situation, and the American people begin to understand that. And if you think that this is going to be just a cakewalk, it is not going to affect America, you better start thinking again, because I fear for my country. Well, anyway, thank you so much for being with us, John. It's always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure, and the Lord bless you and your ministry.
You too. Bye-bye. Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and asking you to pray for America, and certainly pray for our leaders and pray for our ministers, because they should be leading the spiritual battle and help to get them educated and understand that they have an obligation to speak out, because they're going to be judged far more severely than you and I are, not for what we've done, but for what they haven't done. And then we ask you to remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we've got some great programs, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Amen.